Welcome to our event. We'd like to thank the Federalist Society and the Communications Law Practice Group for hosting this event with a wonderful panel and the Honorable Commissioner Carr. Commissioner Brendan Carr has been at the Federal Communications Commission since 2017.
Somebody feels that way, but yeah.
He previously worked as the general counsel at the FCC, as lead advisor to Commissioner Pai. He also worked as an attorney at Wiley Rhine, and served as a law clerk for Judge Shedd of the Fourth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. He was an undergraduate at Georgetown, so you're very much a local, and graduated magna cum laude with his JD from the Catholic University of America. So thank you for coming, and I will be asking you questions related to the 2018 quadrennial review of media ownerships.
Great.
I'm going to move here. So I'm going to make you really do all the hard work.
Sure.
By just asking you the questions and then having, you know, having you tell us the background. So firstly, what? So the context we're talking about right now, the FCC is considering their quadrennial review of media ownership. This is probably a fairly educated audience in terms of these things, but what are the key current rules, especially as they're related to radio, and what was the original reasoning behind the imposition of these rules?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, first of all, for the Federalist Society for hosting this event. Great to see so many people interested in the work of the FCC, and in particular some of our media ownership rules. As you indicate, I've been in this job for about 2 years now, and I've tried to spend as much time in that 2 years outside of DC as possible, not because I don't like my family, but because I think you learn a lot more on the road oftentimes than you do sitting in DC and having the layers of lawyers and lobbyists filter information up to you. And on media ownership and media regulation in general, it's interesting. My policy background had been on the wireless side at the FCC, in addition to being general counsel, where you deal with every issue before the agency. My deepest policy background was on wireless issues. It's a bit of a surprise when you come to media regulation issues from a wireless background. I think the FCC's rules in the media space are really the most outdated set of regulations that we have. And the commission has had a very difficult time, at least up until the last couple of years, modernizing those rules. And in large function, the FCC's media regulations were adopted, many of them in the 1950s, the 1960s, and they assumed a media marketplace where consumers got their information at two ways and at two points in time in the day. The first was in the morning when your local newspaper clunked on your front doorstep and you picked it up. And then once at night when you tuned into three local broadcast television stations. And so the FCC had a lot of heavy-handed rules in place designed to regulate and manage what we would call scarcity. Very few voices, very few means of getting information. And over the years, it's been a challenge for the FCC to update those regulations. And so for me, when I look across the media landscape, it's about how do we deregulate to create a more level playing field with the reality of today's modern media marketplace. If you're a radio station today, you aren't just competing with other radio stations. You're competing with Spotify, Pandora, Google, Facebook, streaming services, cable. There's a tremendous amount of competition for eyeballs and eardrums in the media landscape today, but yet so many of our FCC rules either expressly or implicitly assume that radio and TV aren't competing with any of those providers, and they were written in an era when those don't exist. So I think my overarching vision for FCC media rules is we have to have the courage to update it based on the current media landscape, which is courage that the FCC for years has not shown.
One of the key factors, or the mandate actually, with the quadrennial review is that the FCC be concerned with issues of localism, diversity, and competition. Do you think that the past media ownership rules have actually succeeded in increasing diversity, localism, or competition?
Yeah, I think you've seen a lot of mixed results from the FCC's actions before. Right now on this quadrennial, as we call it, every 4 years, the FCC is mandated to take a look at all of our media ownership rules. It's a good move by Congress to make sure that we are taking a fresh look and updating it, but the FCC hasn't taken advantage of that fresh look to do a whole lot for many, many years. Right now, one issue that I'm focused on in our current review is the rules relating to radio ownership. So if you think about it, the market that radio owners compete in today, by and large, is defined, I think, by the local advertising market. And that's a space right now that radio is increasingly competing in with internet providers. If you look at some of the trend lines about what's happening with local ad revenue, I think it tells a very interesting story. So right now in any given market, more than half of local ad revenue, and this is local doctors, car dealerships, furniture stores, you know, the lifeblood of the revenue for radio stations, more than half of it now has shifted in the last 5 years or so to online platforms, and that's by and large Google and Facebook. And I'm not here in any way to bash their move into local ad revenues. I think that's good for them. It's to point up that there's a lack of parity there when it comes to the regulatory structure. So at a point in time when you have, you know, more than 50% of local ad revenue going to Google, Facebook, and other online providers, typical radio station is getting 1% of that local ad revenue. So they're trying to compete in this space. And these online platforms, rightfully so, grew up in a largely unregulated environment. And now you're competing with radio stations that essentially have one, if not two, hands tied behind their back. We have rules, for instance, that limit the number of stations that a radio company can own in a given market. And that makes it really hard for them to compete in that space of local ad dollars. And then we see that, the impact of that is in terms of local news, local content, because that's what local, that's what TV and radio does so well that a lot of online platforms struggle with. So while they're competing in that same market for ad dollars, you know, they're providing a different local source of information, and radio is doing so, you know, really with their hands tied behind their back.
Right. I mean, so this brings up the question of broadcasters have always been defined separately with separate rules and restrictions. And does that still make sense, given the amount of competition and the evolving nature of the media marketplace and even the increasing overlap across different types of media and communications?
Yeah, I think the shift you've seen in competition, particularly from online platforms, undermines a lot of what we're seeing in terms of the rules. So I'll give you an example. Recently, I was on the road in Montana and Wyoming and had the chance to visit some local radio stations. And the first local radio station we visited, which I think we have a video of, that we walked through, you could see a lot of on-air talent, a lot of investment in local news gathering. There's morning show producers. I think this particular one is in Cody, Wyoming. These are people that not only have their own morning show on the station, but they're at the local grocery store, they're at the post office, they're meeting, they're mingling, they're interacting with the local community, hearing from them about what's important to them. And so we have rules at the FCC that are designed to promote that, to promote localism. And the way we do it, though, has backward results. And I'll give you the other side of that story. On that same trip, we went to another local broadcast station, which you can see here, with very different results. Very, very suspenseful.
I hope they didn't videotape when you broke the window.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. We're from the FCC, there to help. So I'll give you an example of what happened here. Again, we have these regulations on radio that are designed to promote localism. They're designed to promote people that are going to be part of their community. And we do that, again, by having restrictions on owning stations. And so in this one small town or this broader community that we're in, we have one station that's investing in local news gathering, has on-air talent, tries to cover, you know, the local high school football team, is doing everything you generally want a local station to do. And you have this other station that, no fault of its own, just through the economics of serving small communities, what they basically have is a Dell laptop inside that station when it's open, when you can get in it, and it's playing music that's piped in from somewhere else on a loop. And we have these regulations that say this company that is investing in local news coverage can't purchase that station to expand its local news gathering because we want localism. And it's a very clear example, I think, of how we have backward-looking regulation. Again, trying to promote localism, we have a situation in which a Dell laptop is pumping in music on a loop. So I think that's a pretty stark example of where we need to sort of update and modernize our approach to give broadcasters more of a fighting chance in this landscape.
I mean, essentially the rules are ignoring economies of scale in the very costly gathering of local information.
Yeah.
And so when you're forcing the local stations to have so few stations, they're not able to justify as much of their costs.
Yeah, I mean, you look, there's one station owner, I think, in a similar type of area. The last couple of years, just in local ad dollars coming from car dealerships, which was a big source of their revenue to cover the expenses of local news gathering, they lost $150,000 each year that had been coming to them from car dealerships, that those car dealerships moved to online platforms, whether it's Google or Facebook. So again, this movement of ad dollars away, and again, they're not able to get the scope and the scale to compete with online providers that are not subject to these ownership restrictions that can cover 100% of the country. So I think we need to look at ways to at least take one hand out from behind the back of some of these radio stations.
What did you take away from the recent DOJ workshop looking at substitutability of advertising across platforms?
Yeah, I think one thing that was interesting is you had a variety of providers on there. I think whether it was cable providers, I think representatives from edge companies, radio stations, I think they all tended to agree that broadcasters, radio broadcasters, are competing in the same market for local ad dollars. I think that's an area where we have to continue to move. I don't think we should have an approach, whether it's at the FCC or the DOJ, although I'm not an antitrust expert, that should be defining the market in a way that says radio and TV aren't competing for local ad dollars just in the same way that Google and Facebook are. So I think we need to update our thinking to the extent that we're not recognizing that economic reality.
So I recently heard about the FCC incubator program. What is that?
Yeah, this is an approach that we're doing to try to promote even more diversity in radio ownership that can look at some regulatory relief for stations that agree to what we call incubate, which is to bring on less experienced broadcasters and help them get a foothold in the market and then grow on their own. And we're hopeful that that's one step that can help promote greater diversity in media ownership.
And but the key there is that they be in the same markets?
Yeah.
What do you think about any policy options to help promote more localism and local news?
Yeah, we have some good options on the table right now in our quadrennial, including, you know, we have what we call these subcaps, radio subcaps, which is essentially what we've been talking around. And in a nutshell, the way it works is we have a limit that says one owner can't own more than 8 stations, for instance, in a particular market, 5 of which can be FM or AM, and only 3 can be of the other band. And we're looking at some proposals that would relax those rules slightly so that you can get the scale and scope you need to compete. And I think one cautionary tale that I'm cognizant of as we consider these regulations really is the newspaper industry. So for many, many years, starting in 1975, the FCC prohibited TV or radio broadcasters from investing in or owning the local newspaper. And the theory was that there was a concern that there would be a monopoly of the means of distributing information. And perhaps that made sense in 1975, but you know, many, many years ago, particularly with the advent of the internet, it completely undermined, I think, the basis for that concern. Yet up until 2017, the FCC maintained that prohibition. And what happened in the newspaper industry during the period of time which we were, through federal law, prohibiting investment in newspapers, we saw a precipitous decline. There's some stat that I just saw that said that 1,400 towns lost a newspaper over the last few years, including periods of time in which that prohibition was in place. Ad revenue for newspapers declined approaching 70% during some of the same period. And again, the dynamic you saw there, I think, is the same dynamic that you're seeing on the radio side. And the question is, are we going to step in at the FCC soon enough to make a difference? Precipitous decline in newspapers, shuttering in the ability to invest in local news and journalism, in part, many factors, but in part, you know, the rise of the internet and FCC rules that prevented additional investment. Now, if we'd gone back earlier and allowed investment from TV and radio stations into newspapers, would that have stemmed entirely the tide that we're seeing in terms of the trend in newspapers? I don't know that you can make that case, but the rules we had in place certainly didn't help, as you saw the precipitous decline in not just newspapers, but also local news gathering. So I view that as a cautionary tale for the FCC on the radio side, that we don't want to see local radio go the way of some of the struggles we've seen from local newspapers, and that's why I think we need to move now to update some of our approaches.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that struck me, so I was at the FCC in 2006 when we had our quadrennial review, and I oversaw the 10 studies that were done. So I have a little PTSD when I talk about this, but what I found astonishing, and we had pulled together more data for the entire United States, not sampling, and the entire media industry for the U.S. for a five-year period, pulled together some studies that repeatedly found evidence of economies of scope of cross-ownership between newspaper and TV, newspaper and radio, and found economies of scale for like sister TV stations or sister radio stations in the same market. And these were done by 10 different economists from different political viewpoints, and I have to say a lot of the work on the data was done by our internal FCC, our best FCC economists, so they did an amazing job. And yet, all of this was published, part of the record, and, you know, everyone said, great. No one ever mentioned these studies. Didn't seem to really come up the following quadrennial review. I just last night looked through.
This was not when I was on the commission.
No, no. This is when I was there. So
okay, good.
I looked at the 2010 studies. Most of them are just finding non-results in terms of, is there an impact of ownership structure on localism, diversity, and viewpoint? So what I don't understand as an economist is why 10 years, 15 years later, after there have been empirical studies, very detailed empirical studies, this was not more part of the record or part of even the discussion. I almost fault that the FCC should have made a better job, or let me ask it as a question.
No, listen, you're doing great. You're doing great.
And I can ask this because you were not a commissioner then.
Yeah.
Why
but was,
does...
Was Brian the chief of staff of the agency at the time, though?
No. Why does the FCC not make better use of documented, published, peer-review, academic-style research that would help them when it goes to the Court of Appeals? Because the Court of Appeals keeps saying the same thing, that we don't believe this and this, but we have a lot of evidence. It was never put in the final order. You're not responsible, but why do you think that is?
Well, I'll give you two answers. One is, you know, under the current leadership of the FCC, we stood up newly an Office of Economics, and that also looks at data analytics. And I think that idea is to bring economics back into the FCC, and by creating an office that's a standalone office from the other bureaus where the FCC does work, the idea there is you have some independence for the economists, some independent standing for the economists, so that their voices can be louder and can be heard, and they're not sort of, you know, going along with the policy directives of the operating bureau. So I think that decision by the chairman to stand up and bring economics a louder voice hopefully will address a lot of those concerns that we've heard over the years. The other point that I'll make is just a general point, which is applies outside of this context, certainly. You know, regulations are far easier to impose than they are to modernize and update and revise. And I think when you step back to the, I think the highest perspective of this particular issue of radio rules, I mean, to me, it's consistent with much broader principles, which is, on the one side, you've got this massively disruptive force of the internet, which grew up, thrived, and was invented in a free market, largely unregulated regime, and it was able to grow beyond our wildest dreams. On the other hand, you've got radio regulations, TV regulations that came up in a central planning, 1950s, 1960s mindset of regulating scarcity, and it is struggling in part because those regulations are keeping their hands tied behind their back, and they are having difficulty competing with this internet competitor that is operating in a largely free market world. So I think that's the broader dynamic that's at stake here.
Now, let me ask you one question that, the NAB has put forward a proposal to relax the ownership, the limits on radio station ownership within the same market, but they are arguing for larger urban centers for those rules to be removed. Some have argued, or some might argue, that in more rural settings where there might not be as much broadband deployment, the story might look different, and there might be some justification for maintaining these rules if one were to assume these rules were useful. Okay, so my little caveat. But yeah. Do you think that this issue of the digital divide comes into play at all when considering these media ownership rules?
Yeah, particularly for Monty, who's vigorously taking notes for the trade press, I haven't made a final decision in this yet, but here's where I'm leaning, which is similar to some of the ideas that you talked about. I think particularly in the smallest markets, we have to be doing everything we can to incentivize investment in local news gathering, in local radio. And so I think it makes sense to provide a lot of regulatory relief in those markets. I think when you talk about bigger cities, I think we still need to take some steps to deregulate there, but I think maintaining some limits there could make sense based at least on some of the factual record that we're seeing developed. I'm open-minded, but that general approach of relaxing ownership rules on the radio side in terms of radio subcaps for smaller markets, given the dynamics that they're facing economically, makes sense, and also relaxing perhaps to a lesser degree in some of the bigger markets. Also questions if people want.
Yeah, are there any questions that you would like to ask Commissioner Carr?
And one thing I can add to this, I was thinking about was this, on the drive over here was this Reagan quote about if it moves, tax it, if it keeps moving, regulate it, if it stops moving, subsidize it. And you can see that play out, I think, in this space. Some of the same groups that were advocating against allowing TV and radio to invest in newspapers and saw now the decline in local news gathering as a result are coming out with proposals that we should tax Google and Facebook and then have the government take that tax revenue and subsidize local news gathering. So it is an entire regulatory big government approach where if we can deregulate, if we can allow the private sector to invest more, that's a far preferable path in my mindset than keeping the regulatory shackles on local radio and then having to step in down the road with some sort of subsidy approach when our regulations stop them from moving.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if that analogy worked, but we'll see. We'll see how it comes out in the trade press.
Yes, please.
Hi, Monty Taylor, Com Daily. Is the proposal that you just said you're leaning towards, where the larger the city markets get less relaxed rules, is that distinct from the NAB proposal, where the top markets still have some limits on FM and the lower markets don't?
Well, since I haven't made a final decision, I can't endorse any particular proposal at this point in time, but the dynamics of what was put forward in the NAB proposal in terms of looking at large markets getting some regulatory relief and more relief in some of the smaller markets is consistent with where I'm leaning right now.
Thank you.
Is that vague enough? Not getting me in trouble.
I apologize. I had switched that when I was talking about the NAB. Okay. I flipped it.
Why shouldn't it be the role of the federal government to regulate media ownership at all?
Yeah, I like it. First principles question. So you're right. As an original matter, it is right to question. Again, we have competitors in a marketplace, whether it's Google and Facebook. They can reach 100% of the U.S. population. Why do we have rules on the book that limit, you know, TV stations to X percent and radio stations to X percent? I think that's a question that is sort of fully worthy of discussion. From my perspective at the FCC, part of that is constrained through statutes that Congress has passed that direct us to either achieve particular public policy goals, or at least according to some people's readings, you know, specifically enshrine in federal law caps on how many eyeballs certain owners can reach. But that is a very important question that I think we all need to be asking, that I won't be answering.
Nick Rotz, Hogan Lovells. Given the localism focus, is there any thought on reinstituting Class D license, LPFM licenses that haven't been issued since 1978?
I thought this was going to be a robocall question from Hogan Lovells, but thankfully it's not. Glad to get a non-robocall question. Yeah. We're looking at, you know, a wide range of issues, and you know, we're happy to look at that as well. And if radio regulation is not your thing, you can feel free to ask about anything else as well.
Yeah. Now, if your objective is to promote local ownership and local service by radio stations, then why doesn't the commission take into account where the owner comes from? Is there any concern when that owner controls two-thirds or three-quarters of the market, and why don't you let low-power FMs sell commercials so they can be viable?
Yeah, these are good ideas. You know, one of the points is you have, again, these rules that say this one station, you know, has to stay standalone, even if it's just a Dell laptop with a stick broadcasting out music, even if its owner is located in Chicago or Washington, you know, states away from it. So we have these rules designed to, in theory, promote localism that, for this reason and other reasons, are really having the opposite effect in local communities.
I think we could take one last question.
With this effort to promote localism and diversity, I assume that radio is going to die soon, or sometime.
We have some radio owners here, so you might, you know.
but assuming if it did, and everything was on the internet, does the FCC, how would it promote that interest in diversity and localism if everything's on the internet?
Yeah. So I think, again, when you look at the parallel to newspapers and you look at the decline that we've seen, 1,400 communities losing newspapers over the last few years, a big part of that, not all of it, there's some macro trends happening, but was the FCC stopping investment in those stations that could have made a difference, at least in some cases. And that's what I think we need to try to avoid on the radio side, is instead of accepting that, you know, radio just can't compete with Google and Facebook and Spotify, why don't we try a deregulatory approach and say, okay, let's allow more investment on the radio side, let them at least take one hand out from behind their back, and let's see what they can do. They've got a track record of being live and local, of offering something that's difficult for a nationwide internet platform to replicate. And so my instinct is, you know, let's see where through deregulation we can let them compete in something more approaching a level playing field.
I think I'll repeat your question to Jeffrey when he's up here later. Well, thank you, Commissioner Carr. That was great.
Thanks.